Welcome to the Three Creeks Church podcast. We're a church in Gahanna that exists to help people find and follow God. Today, we're looking at a very popular story in the Bible. It's a story that Jesus himself told. You may know it as the prodigal son. We hope that by listening to this message, you learn more about the radical love that God has for every person on this earth.
Creeks. My name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here, and you look a heck of a lot better than a video camera lens. Man, 55 Sundays in a row staring into cameras, and here we are. We're back. Can we praise the Lord that we get to be here today for a minute? Come on. When I heard that Gahanna schools were going to go back to 5 days a week in classes, I got curious, what does this mean for our church? We rent schools, and so I called over and I said, hey, what does this mean for us? And they said, and understandably, they were like, let us get in, let us see how it goes. We want to keep things safe. And I said, that's cool, we get that. And right before we hung up, I said, April 4th is Easter. And there was this long pause on the other end of the line, and the person responded, now that would be good timing, wouldn't it? And I said, well, yes, it would. And so things just got moving, and they've been gracious to us to allow us to be here and to meet safely. And so I'm thrilled to be back. It's so timely that it is Easter and, seeing a lot of new faces. We're kind of in a new space. This is the first time our church has ever met here. And, I'm a little nervous. 55 Sundays, I'm a little out of practice, dusting off the cobwebs, and it's Easter. I gotta bring it today, This is my Super Bowl. Because if I do good today, everybody might come back on Christmas, I better nail it, Easter Sunday, it's my favorite Sunday of the year. It has to be. What's interesting about Easter Sunday is that there's people in the room that are all over the place as to why you're here. Somebody in here is more excited to be here than I am. You've been counting down the days, and you are so excited to be here. Somebody's here because culturally or morally, you just go to church on Easter. It's just what you do, And somebody here is here because there's this voice in the back of your head. It sounds like your grandma, probably is your grandma, who said, you go to church on Easter. And so to avoid that guilt, you're here. And then somebody in here is here just to keep the peace. Your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your kids, your parents, somebody said, will you just come to Easter? And just to keep the peace, you're here and you're like, when is this guy going to stop talking? And I get it. I get that we are there. You got to admit, no matter where you're at, though, on that, you got to admit that it is at least interesting. It is worth considering that 2,000 years ago, this guy named Jesus, known at the time as a traveling miracle man, he gains in popularity. He ends up being killed on a cross with two other people on either side of him. And then they put his body, they wrap it up, and they put it in a tomb. He died. And then those that followed him at the time, they ended up going to their death saying that Jesus Christ had not stayed in the tomb, but that he had risen again to life. And 500 people saw him in the flesh after he had died. That was 2,000 years ago. And now, Jesus is on The Simpsons. And Ricky Bobby prays to 8-pound, 6-ounce baby Jesus. Michael Scott dresses up like Jesus for the Christmas party. You've probably seen a play called Jesus Christ Superstar. You've probably seen a shirt that says, Jesus is my homeboy. You've probably seen someone wearing a bracelet with its WWJD, what would Jesus do? And you've probably seen a little statue of Jesus on a cross, hanging on a chain on somebody's neck. Carrie Underwood wants Jesus to take the wheel. And every time you stub your toe, you say his name. Right? I mean, you scream his name. It's just worth considering, he wasn't a war hero. And he wasn't a king of a nation. He was a Pied Piper-esque traveling preacher, but we're still talking about him. That's worth considering. Is what was written about Jesus true? You see, Jesus, he didn't hang around a lot of church people. And the church people, the religious people of the day, they didn't really like that about Jesus. In fact, that's what rubbed him the wrong way the most, that Jesus would go and he would hang out with the sinners. And one day, all the church people, all the religious people got Jesus in a room and they said, "Hey, why don't you want to spend time with us?" And, you know, church people were not the smartest people out there. And so Jesus knew that. And so rather than explaining the answer, he said, "Well, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story to answer your question." And I want to tell that story that Jesus told to this room full of religious people. It's the story of the prodigal son. Maybe you've heard it before. It's in the book of Luke in chapter 15. And if you have a Bible, you could turn there now or you could turn it on. And I'm going to go through the story of the prodigal son. By the way, if you don't have a Bible, we're going to throw the words up on the screen for today's story. And then on your way out today, there's a stack of Bibles. And one of those has your name on it. You take it, free 99, you get to keep it. When Jesus tells this story of the prodigal son, I'm just going to guess that there's some folks in the room that have heard the story before. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people have heard the story of the prodigal son. But I'm just telling you, there is more to this story than you ever thought. And so whether you've been in church for 25 years or 25 minutes, this story is worth considering this morning. Jesus is sitting there with all these religious people, and this is what he said. He said, Luke 15, Jesus told him a story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, "I want my share of your estate now before you die." So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. You guys, when Jesus says that in that room, all the people listening, they go, no, this story cannot be true. And in fact, this story is not true. Jesus made it up. It's like The Bachelor, totally made up. Jesus is making up a story to answer their question. And so he says, a man had two sons, and the younger son decided, "Hey, I want my share of the inheritance now while you are alive." And everybody in the room would have said, "There's no way. This is an unheard of request." And at this time in history, this is grounds for excommunication from the family. The son is essentially looking at his dad and saying, "I wish that you were dead. And I want what you have to offer right now." At this time in history, the older son would get twice as much as any of the other sons. And so if the father had two sons, and I do the math, that means that one third of the father's estate is what the younger son is asking for. You see, he wanted the father's things, but he doesn't want the father. He wants what the father can provide for him, but he doesn't want a relationship with the father. And even more shocking than the son's request, which would have had everyone's jaws on the floor, what's even more shocking is the father's response. The father goes, "Okay, fine, I'll divide my wealth among you." And the people listening are going, no. This is not possible. Is he losing his mind? He'll have to sell his land. He'll have to sell his livestock. He's essentially having to sell his identity for this greedy, foolish son. The guys are going, this is not possible. But now they're in. What's going to happen? The father agreed. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money in wild living. That's actually where we get the word prodigal. The word prodigal means reckless or wasteful. The prodigal son, the reckless son, he goes and spends it on wild living. As a seventh grader, inching my way through puberty, I was very interested in the youth pastor elaborating on wild living. Anybody else? How far is he going to go? The youth pastor would say, he drank beer. Oh, that's a gambling. Whoa. Is he going to do it? And sex. And as a seventh grader, I'm like, tell me more, you know? And somebody else knows what I'm talking about. Because in seventh grade, this verse was like, somebody expound on this. I want to know about wild living. The younger son moves to a distant country, and a third of his father's wealth he just wasted on things that you and I would say are reckless. They're reckless. He tried out everything that the world had to offer. He wanted to taste and see what was good. And he bought every thrill he could find. And in verse 14 it says, about the time that his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land and he began to starve. You see, he bought every thrill he could find and it left him completely empty. I mean, this guy's completely empty. He's got no money. He's got no food. He has no job. His family lives in a distant country. He doesn't have any friends advocating on his behalf. He is completely empty. So look what he does. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. But no one gave him anything. I mean, there's nothing more humiliating than this moment in his life. But he's got no other choice. I mean, have you ever driven by a pig farm? You live in Ohio. Of course you have. This is not where I want to spend my time. And he's a pig feeder, and at this time, pigs are considered the most disgusting, the most unclean animal of all. And this is his job. And think about this. Think about this. Not only is he feeding the pigs, but he's hungry too. And so when he picks up the bucket full of pods and makes his way from the storehouse over to the trough to dump it in the bucket for the pigs, he's got to look around and see if anybody's going to catch him as he sneaks his hand into the bucket and puts a little bit in his mouth. I mean, this is rock bottom. Rock bottom. And then the younger son has what I call the moment of recognition. He has this moment of recognition in verse 15, or verse 17. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant. This is the turning point in the life of the younger son. This is the turning point. It's the moment of recognition. It's this moment when the light bulb comes on and he realizes, I'm not living the life that I want to live. I am not living the life I want to live. It's like the light bulb comes on. I talk to people all the time that are having this moment where they realize, I'm not living the life that I want to live. But to the son's credit, to his credit, he doesn't just think about it. He actually makes a move. He makes a decision. He gets up. Verse 20 says, he returned home to his father. He got up and actually started walking home. And I've thought, man, what was that road like? What was that road like between where he's at and where the father, where his home is at? It says he was in a distant country, but I don't know how far the road was. I don't know if it was an easy straight shot or if he had to go up and around and over mountain. I don't know what the road was like, but I'm just thinking about this son as he goes home. How many times do you think he would have thought about turning back? But he doesn't. He just sticks one foot in front of the other. And his clothes are filthy. And he's lost weight. He's skin and bones. He smells terrible. He's not shaved. He's filthy. He doesn't have any good shoes. He just walked all the way home. He might not even have had any shoes. He walked all the way home, and I imagine thinking about turning around every couple minutes. And the people at this point in the room, remember Jesus is telling this to these people, they're just glued. What is going to happen next, Jesus? And Jesus says, while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. You see, if we read that and it said something different, Like if it said, you know, while the son was still a long way off, the father just stood on his porch and tapped his foot and said, "This better be good." See, we would read that and go, well, it makes sense. That seems even like a more logical part to the story than what is actually written down. What this says is that while he was still a long way off, the father started running at him. So he like picks up his robe that he would have been wearing at the time and just awkwardly starts running at his son. And the son, think about this for a second. The son doesn't know. He didn't call him and say, "How's this going to go, Dad?" This is the first time he's seen his dad. And so as his dad runs after him, his son's got to go, is he about to punch me? Is he about to knock me out? I wonder if the son kind of braced for impact a little bit. But the father comes and he just hugs his son. He wraps his arm around his boy and embraces him and just starts kissing him. And he's filthy and he's disgusting, but the father doesn't care because it says that he was filled with compassion and love for his boy. And the father says, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. Do you know whose robe that would have been? That would have been the dad's robe. The finest robe in the house is the dad's robe. He says, put my robe on him. Don't even give him his old one. Put mine on him now. Put the family ring on, the family signet ring. This means that he's my son. Put it on him. Servants, they don't get to wear shoes in the house, but my son gets some sandals on his feet. This is my boy. This is my boy, and he's home. And the father doesn't stop there. He says, kill the calf that we've been fattening. The big one, Brutus, kill him. We got to celebrate with a feast because my son was dead and he returned to life. He was lost and he is found. The son is standing there like Cinderella, getting dressed by the mice for the ball. You know what I'm talking about? They're throwing a robe on him, putting shoes on his feet, ring on his finger. What's going through his mind? If you're there watching that scene, what's happening? Is he crying? Is he laughing? Is he just stunned silent, or is he trying to explain himself? I don't know. I just imagine that he's overwhelmed with emotion. And the father's saying, kill the big pig that we got ready for this. This is the biggest party we're ever going to throw. You know, think about it. If you're in the room, I mean, some of you guys have heard that story before. You're like, yeah, like this is a cool story. Imagine hearing this story from the first time from Jesus himself in a room. Remember who's in the room? It's a bunch of religious church people. Think about how this plays out. A couple months later, after Jesus tells this story, those people brutally arrest Jesus, falsely accuse Jesus, and publicly crucify Jesus on a cross. The same people. And Jesus went into a tomb, and 3 days later, we celebrate Easter because he came back to life and walked around, and 500 people or more saw him. If Jesus doesn't do that, then this is a really cute story about a dad and his son. But because Jesus did that, this becomes our story. This story becomes our story because God is the father in the story. And we are the younger son in the story. And the road home that I was talking about a little bit ago, the road home is Jesus. The road home is Jesus. The road from where we're at to where the father is Jesus. Jesus said it himself. He actually said, "I am the way. Nobody gets to the Father except through me." Except through me. Jesus and what he did on Easter, this is the road home. And so without the cross, without the resurrection, without the story of Easter, this is a really Pulitzer Prize level story. Doesn't have a lot of ramifications. But because of what Jesus actually did, all of a sudden this story is our life. And I get it. It is not popular for me to say to you, you're the younger son in the story. You would rather me say, man, you're awesome, and you should just embrace your awesomeness. That would get me some podcast followers. but I'm in church, so I can't lie. We are the younger son. Think about how similar we are to him. Remember his story? He said, I told you that he wanted the father's things, but he didn't want the father. Don't we do that from time to time? Where we certainly want to be able to pray. God help us, I'm in a tough situation, but church, we want God to keep us safe. We want God to bless our ventures. I don't want to get locked into religion. It's like we want what the Father has to offer, but we don't want everything he has to say. Aren't we so much like him? The other thing that the son did is he went and found every thrill he could find, and it left him empty. That's my story too. I have tried them out. And listen to me, the thrill of the world is real. The pleasures of the world are real. They just don't last very long. They just don't last very long. You know, so it's if we're looking for a relationship or money or a promotion or whatever you have your sights on, if you're looking for that to fulfill you, it will not. The hole in us is God-shaped, and only God can fill it. And then in the same way, maybe like the younger son, maybe just like him, you too recently, or maybe even today, are having this moment of recognition where if you're being totally honest, you go, I'm not living the life that I wanted to live. I'm not at peace. I'm pretty anxious. I'm pretty stressed out. I feel like I'm in a hurry all the time. You're like, I'm not the husband that I wanted to be. I'm not the wife that I wanted to be. I'm not the kind of parent that I wanted to be. I don't have the marriage that I wanted to have. Everything that I wanted, I got it, and I'm still not happy, and now I'm confused by that. You just kind of go through the motions of life. Maybe you too, like him, are having this moment of recognition where you're coming to your senses and going, this isn't the life that I wanted to have. Maybe that moment is for you right now. We are so much like the younger son in so many ways. And I want to ask if anybody in here wants to be like him in one more way. And that way is, you don't just think about making a decision, but you make a decision. Like you get up and you go home. I talk to people all the time who are experiencing this moment where the light bulb comes on and they start seeing things clearly, but then to actually make the move, that's a courageous thing to do. But in the same way that the younger son got up and just started putting one foot in front of the other and made his way all the way back to the Father, I want to ask if today's the day that you want to do the same thing, to go home, to take the road home. The road home is Jesus. The road home, listen, let me be very clear. The road home is belief in Jesus. It is faith in Jesus that he died and rose again and waits for you in heaven. How do we do that? How do we go home? Well, the son had one thing wrong, and I want to make sure that we get this one thing right at this point in the story. Remember, he's sitting there with the pigs. He comes to his senses. He's like, oh, man, even the servants at my dad's house, they have food to eat. I don't have anything to eat. So he comes to his senses. He decides he's going to go home, and while he's sitting there, he kind of scratches out this speech he's going to give his dad. Dad, Father, I've sinned against heaven. I've sinned against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Please, hire me as a servant. Do you notice that his request at first is not accept him back into the family? He wants to be a hired servant. In other words, the son's approach is, I'm going to go home and I'm going to earn my way back. I'm going to pay off my debt myself. I'm going to prove to my dad that I'm not a loser and I'm going to earn my way back to the top. Dad, will you just hire me as a servant? That's what he's going to say. And when his dad's running at him, hiking his skirt up, and they hug, his son starts a speech. Dad, I've sinned against heaven. I've sinned against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Do you notice the father doesn't even let him get to the next line? He says, But Dad, I wrote this speech. Hubba soup. I'll have none of it. I will have none of that. You are my son. You are my son. You're my boy. Get the robe for him. Get the shoes for him. Get the ring. You're my son. Kill the fat calf. Kill the pig. You're my son. I will have none of this. Friends, listen to me. You cannot earn your way back to God. You can't do it. You cannot be a good enough person that God all of a sudden says, now you're good enough. You can't do it. It's too hard. You cannot work your way back into his family. The road home is Jesus. It is belief in Jesus. It is what is belief in what Jesus has done on your behalf. On your behalf. See, the road home is Jesus. And this is the picture of God. This is the picture of God. Just like in that video. I get it. Some people, you know, you tiptoed in here, haven't been to church in a while. You almost feel guilty walking in because you're like, if they've been taking attendance, they know I haven't been very good recently. I get it. This is God. This is God. He wants you to come home. He wants you to come home. And when you do come home, he's got this embrace for anybody that's been wandering. And it doesn't make you sit in the corner and think about what you've done. He says, get in here. You're my child. If anybody wants to make that move today, if anybody wants to make that decision today to put your faith in Jesus, I want to give you the chance to do that right now. I'm going to have everybody bow your head and close your eyes where you're at so you're not distracted by anything else in the room. I'm going to pray a prayer, and I'm going to ask that if you want to give your life to Jesus today, or if you want to recommit your life to Jesus today, maybe the last few years have been rough, and today's the day that you want to come home and re-enter into this relationship with the Father. I'm going to pray a prayer, and I'm going to give you a few seconds between every line to repeat the prayer after me. You can say it out loud, you can say it under your breath, or you can say it in your heart. Repeat after me if today's the day that you want to make a move. Father God, I am not living the life I want to live. I need your help. I've wandered from you and I need your forgiveness. I want to come home. Will you save me from my sins? I believe in you. Amen. Amen. You can look up at me again. Listen, if you prayed that prayer, whether it was the first time you've prayed it or you've done it 20 times before, but today it really meant something to you, then I want to ask you to fill out that connection card that you were handed when you come in. At the bottom of it, there's a box that says start a relationship with God. Just fill it out. Somebody on our team will contact you this week, and we just want to celebrate with you what God has done in your life today. I also want to say that as a church, as the pastor of this church, I want you to see me holding this up in the same way that God would put this up on his porch to welcome you home. I want our church to feel the same way. This is a safe space. You are welcome here. If you haven't been to church in a while, that's fine. We're so glad you're here. Like, we're so glad you're here. And at this church, you get to just be you. You don't got to come in and put on a show for anybody. You just get to be you. All your questions, all your doubts, you get to bring those here. We are thrilled that you are here in this church. And so I hang this white flag out in front of you to say, hey, this church is a safe place. Wherever you're at on your spiritual journey, we're glad you're here with us. The last four words of that story that I read you earlier that Jesus told them, maybe my favorite four words of the whole thing. So the party began. So the party began, like right away. Think about it. The son comes home. He's walking on the road. The dad comes out, the hug. Just a couple hours later, as soon as the pig was done cooking, the party began. Dad's like, turn up the music. Turn it up. Bieber's got another album out. Turn it up. The party began. And when the son comes into the party, listen, they don't make him sit on the side and say, you think about what you've done. He's in the middle. He's dancing with everybody else because he's a son. And so if you are in a relationship with Jesus, if you have come home, if you have belief in him, then the party begins. The party has begun for us. And so on an Easter Sunday, it is appropriate for those whose lives have been changed by God to party a little bit. And so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Would you stand up where you're at? We're going to sing one more song. And when we sing this song about the beautiful name of Jesus, I want you to have this spirit of celebration in your heart. Maybe it might even inch its way into your hands. This celebration in your heart that you were lost, but you've been found. That you were dead, but you are alive because of what happened on Easter. Because of what happened on Easter, this is not just a cute story about a dad and his boy. This is our story, and the road home is Jesus.
Thanks for listening. For more information about our church, our weekly services, joining a group or a team, or to give online, visit 3creekschurch.com.